have no idea what loss is.
You have no idea what loss is.
I reckon it's got something to do with that girl.
It's got everything to do with that little girl.
I can take care of myself.
How many close calls have we had?
Can't be any worse out there. Can it?
Every guy in this room is staring at you right now. Maybe they're staring at you. Maybe they're jealous of you.
I'm just a girl. Not a threat.
Oh, Ellie. I think they should be terrified of you.
Welcome to the world of The Last of Us. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for the Naughty Dog video game series and the HBO on Max and Sky Atlantic television series. I'm your host Matthew, and the time has come. I've been on a very, very long journey in recent weeks, a very big journey in recent weeks. It's finally time. I think I'm ready. I don't know how I could be more ready necessarily to do what I've been teasing for about the last 6 weeks or so, something like that, is my Last of Us, another Last of Us podcast project. So the actual name, what I'm going to call this, is called Revisiting The Last of Us. Now, don't worry, I'm going to explain everything to you. In terms of spoilers, what I'm going to be doing is I will be talking about Last of Us 2, because I did play that as well. I'm going to explain to you the spoilers, and then I'm going to explain to you what I played and watched, and then we will start getting into things, I suppose. So, in order for me to kind of do this in any way, shape or form, from a starting standpoint, I will be spoiling The Last of Us 1 and Season 1, which is an alternate version of the same story, if you will. So, if you've not experienced The Last of Us at all, first of all, where have you been and what are you doing? You're not really going to be able to listen to any of this, unfortunately. But Last of Us is there for you to experience. Go and do it right now. What are you waiting for? You can play it on PS3, you can play it on PS4, you can play it on PS5. So yeah, that's good. The first half of this podcast, and I've laid it out in my notes here, the first half of this is going to be purely talking about both The Last of Us 1 and Season 1, sort of in combination and otherwise, because they are, again, if you've experienced one, you'll know what to expect from the other, barring certain different changes. So that's the first half. So if you've not played Last of Us 2 and you're kind of worried about spoilers here, I am going to do a very clear, like, spoiler second half sort of thing. And I won't really be talking about Last of Us 2 in a spoiler-free way unless there's certain things that come up in my mind where when I talk about Last of Us 1 that I get a spoiler-free thought on Last of Us 2. But that's not quite the idea here. So for the entire first half of this podcast, I'll be focusing on all different stuff for Last of Us 1 and Season 1, the different versions of Last of Us, interviews, all that kind of stuff that I came across. Then we'll take a break, go into the spoiler section, and in that spoiler section, I will be purely talking about Last of Us 2, again, unless Last of Us 1 comes up in some way, shape, or form. So hopefully that explains the spoilers. So just to reiterate, if you've not experienced The Last of Us at all, again, go and play it and or watch it. If you're not a gamer, of course you can play Season 1. That's kind of what Season 1 was built for, and we'll talk about that here as well. And if you have a PS3, a PS4, or a PS5, all those versions of that game are about as good as each other in certain ways, shapes, or forms. I've got some interesting kind of comparisons to make there as well. So for the first half, spoiler section for The Last of Us, but I will not be spoiling The Last of Us 2. So if you're worried here and now for the spoiler-free section for Last of Us 2, I will not be spoiling The Last of Us 2 in this first half. So if you're worried about spoilers for the game, for the second season, obviously maybe third, maybe fourth, maybe whoever knows how many seasons, for that, I will not be spoiling that in the first half. But in order to enjoy this podcast at all, you will need to at least experience Last of Us 1 either on PS3, PS4, PS5, or Season 1, or all of the above, whatever. So just to kind of make that clear. So with that out of the way, so what have I actually consumed? What have I been up to and sort of doing? Obviously playing The Last of Us. Now, there was a little change in my idea as I was going through things. So what my original, well, simple idea was to download the PS5 version of Last of Us 1, play through all of that, obviously experience it, could kind of get a refresher on it again. That is my fourth round through the game. That always by default includes Left Behind, which obviously was episode 7. I usually do play that after I finish the first game. I was reading that some people kind of pause at that point in the story and they go and play the DLC and then they come back. I've never actually done that before. I don't feel the need to kind of go and do that necessarily. So I experienced that. So the PS5 version of Last of Us 1 and Left Behind. Then I went and watched Season 1. Now on the Blu-ray Season 1 discs that I got, or box set, whatever, for Season 1, thanks to my uncle from Christmas, that I got, it also included all of the, I think it's called Behind the Episodes. Now there is one for every single episode, and they're between like 5 to 12 minutes. It's basically Neil and Craig and other people involved in the show talking about each episode. I watched all of those after every episode. So I watched all of Season 1 again, all 9 episodes, which includes the Left Behind story. And then all of the, like, after each episode, went and watched the behind the scenes episode thing, which I think I'd seen some of them. I hadn't seen all of those. So there were, out of all of this, just to be clear, by the way, there is some new stuff I've not experienced before, which is going to be interesting to talk about here. So I went and did that. And then once I'd finished the 9 episodes, I then did go, now I can't remember every single thing of what every single bit's called, because there's quite a few pieces. I watched every single extra that was on the DVD. Not a lot of them are that long. There's like these talk things with Troy Baker. He talks about certain parts of the game. There is a, like, I think there's Whose Line Is It? And there's also Guess the Line, like if the line is from The Last of Us. That's done by, I think, 3 different pairs of characters. I got 2 of those wrong throughout the entire thing, which is quite good. That was basically like one of, there was these 3 pairs of actors, and one of them read out a line to the other one, and they had to guess if it was from The Last of Us or not. That's where I got just 2 of those wrong, which is quite impressive, I guess. So I watched that, and then I watched, I can't remember all of the bits. I think there was like the Get to Know Me stuff, because HBO has been, or Max has been, doing that with other shows as well. I watched all of those, so those were all really, really good to watch. And then I went and played the first half, or what I consider to be the first half, of The Last of Us Part 2. This is the PS5 version of the game. So I did that. Now, I'm not going to say here which moment I stopped at. And the moment I stopped at in Part 2 is where I think Season 2 could and should end. But I don't know where it's going to end. But it feels like a bit of a natural stopping point. Or in and around that sort of piece anyway. So that was what I did for that. So I do have half a playthrough of Last of Us 2 ready to get back to. I think I'm going to resume that after Season 2 ends, assuming it, well, it doesn't matter if it ends at the exact same point. That's what I'm going to go and do for that. And I thought I was going to be finished there. Sorry, no, there was 2 other things I hadn't seen yet, which I went and watched, which was the 30 minutes behind the scenes for the TV show. And there is a 90-minute, I think it's about 90-minute, it's called Grounded. It's a documentary about the first game, just like they did very recently last year with the second game. The documentary for the first game I'd never seen before. So I watched the documentary for the first game at a bit of a later point, but I'll get to that in a second. So I went and watched, I then watched the behind-the-scenes thing for Season 1. That was only about half an hour. Some of that is repeated stuff from the get to know, from the behind the scenes episode bits, but that was in there as well. So I watched all of that. And then my plan from there was, okay, watch that and then watch the Grounded documentary, because I'd already played Last of Us 1 again through PS5. And then I thought, you know, one thing I've never done before is play the original PlayStation 3 version of The Last of Us 1 and, of course, Left Behind as well. So I went and did that. Now, I'm not going to sit here and bore you with details of how I struggled with the tech stuff with the PS3. It's basically just a bit of an annoying console. But as of a few hours ago, I finished Left Behind, which is the conclusive point of me consuming parts for this. Now, in between those bits, because I was watching like bits and pieces of like behind the scenes interviews, old interviews, and things like that, obviously the YouTube algorithm kicked in and just kept feeding me new bits and new bits and new bits and new bits. I was like, okay, as good as these are to watch, I can't sit, like you could just be there forever watching those bits, because this goes back obviously like 12 years at this point, so there's loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of interviews at this point. I basically just consumed a bunch of those. I did also, by the way, with The Last of Us 1 on PS5 and The Last of Us Part 2 on PS5, I did play with director commentary, which for Part 2 I'd also not experienced before. So seeing that there is a good chunk of stuff in here that I've not actually done before. The main three things I hadn't done before was play Part 2 with director commentary, which I've still got half of left. But again, I wanted to stop where I think Season 2 is going to stop, because even for when we get into Season 2, it felt a bit like not a waste of time, but it felt unnecessary for what I was trying to do with this. It's like, okay, play and watch what we've already had, and then play up to where I think Season 2 is going to end. But for me to go beyond that point, and we're not going to get Season 3 for probably another 2 years, it felt very unnecessary to do that at this point. So that's why I stopped at that point. But yeah, director commentary for Part 2 on PS5. The Grounded documentary for the first game on PS3. Those are the new bits I hadn't consumed. And then, of course, actually playing The Last of Us 1 on PS3. Because as big as a fan of I am of these games, and I love these games, both these games, very, very, very dearly, I can't call myself a day one fan. I was not there in 2013. I didn't even have a PlayStation 3 in 2013. I had moved over to Xbox, because I only started playing The Last of Us in, I think it was 2016. I think that was when I got my PS4. And I kind of knew a lot of stuff about Last of Us, because it was, not that I wanted to avoid it, but it was one of them games that was just talked about constantly, obviously, because of the big impact it made. So I was very aware of it. I even think I knew some spoilers from the start. But yeah, I'm a fan from 2016 onwards. Can't call myself a day one fan. So just because of that, because I kind of skipped the PS3 generation. I was on the Xbox 360, but I skipped the PS3 generation. I had never experienced the first one on PS3, so that was like a whole new kind of experience to me. That will be a good big portion of what I'm talking about today, because there's a lot of like fresh thoughts coming out of my mind there. So yeah, I've been busy. I've been very busy. And look, I've talked a little bit before about how, and I think there's a legitimate reason for this. Because I was consuming so much stuff, and it was Last of Us and Last of Us and Last of Us, I don't know about other people that have played, or I think it's more for people that have played the series than watched it, and I want to talk about that in a second as well. I don't know what type of fatigue to describe it as, but it can induce I think because the gameplay is so intense, and because the story is so deep and emotional, those two things combined together, because you never really, apart from the human moments where characters get moments to breathe, there's not a lot of time to breathe in the game, because there's either something dramatic happening in the story, or you're trying to run away from enemies. It's only really when there's heartfelt moments in the cutscenes, and there's obviously bits where you're just scavenging. Those are the only real quiet moments of The Last of Us, across all of it. So, because I wanted to consume all this quicker than I did, not because I wanted to rush through it, but I found myself just needing to just pace myself now and again, because it just, wrings so much emotion out of you, and you can only kind of take, as impactful and as amazing as it is, you can only really take so much at one point. Maybe I'm on my own in that sort of feeling, that kind of, it's not like I can play, this might sound a bit bad or whatever, although kind of normal, I can play 3, 4, 5 hours of Call of Duty, game after game after game after game after game, and that's obviously got that loop to it. But you're not, and there is like stressful times when you're playing COD, if it's like, you know, 1v6 and you've got to defend the bomb, for example, but there's no emotional strain there. Whereas with Last of Us, where it's like, oh my god, just about survived that encounter, or hey, another emotional story beat where someone gets, you know, put in danger, or someone talks about something, or someone dies, and there is an emotional strain to it, I think. So again, as much as I love this series very, very dearly, grown to love it more and more the more of I've consumed of it. That's kind of a, I guess, a not really brief explanation, but an explanation as to what it is that I've consumed. And here we are 15 minutes in. As of the time of recording right now, I've got about 2 to 3 hours, depending on tiredness and whatever else, of time. And I do hope to get this done. I was thinking maybe, okay, if I do a couple of hours and two sessions, but I don't know how long this thing is going to exactly take me to record. I did say on Gaming Talk last week that it'll be at least 2 hours, and we're already 15 minutes in. But I just wanted to explain what I consumed, what I'd done, how the spoilers are going to work, because there's a lot of stuff in here. So, right, where should we go to next? I do have a general list of notes. So, explain, what did I consume? General thoughts and feelings. For those of you that have listened to me for a long time, you'll know how I feel about the series already. But I'll tell you something that stick out. Rather than just kind of repeating things I've said before about like how much I love the series, because that's very obvious at this point. Excuse me. One thing I did come away with, excuse me, one new thing I did kind of come away with was, so even from the first time I played and finished Last of Us 2, I already thought it was better than the first one. And not because the first one's bad or because the first one's worse than the second necessarily, but there's an interesting kind of reflection I've had with how the people in the community of Last of Us kind of feel about Part 2 and all the things that happen there, and the reasons that those people don't like that game as much. And there's something kind of interesting I picked up on with that, which is that, so specifically after finishing the PS3 version of Last of Us, I did genuinely come away with a much bigger appreciation of that game. I know I reference Part 2 a lot, and I talk about Part 2 a lot, and I do think it's an extension of Part 1, it's better than Part 1, but it also tries to do something different. But what Part 2 does with that, and again, this is where you don't need to worry about spoilers, because again, I'm going to bring up Last of Us 2, but I'm not going to spoil it here. Where that kind of takes, obviously, you'll I'm assuming you're all, those of you that are here, you know what happens in Last of Us 1, because that was the rule I set out for the spoilers. It takes Joel's lie essentially from Part 1, and expands on it. And it's very interesting when you look at kind of the sort of the format and the formula of how Part 1 builds itself and ends, and then how it feeds into Part 2, and then how Part 2 kind of grabs that idea and expands it into this new thing. So what you essentially kind of have, and this is the way that I kind of look at it, now this isn't to simplify Part 1, but it is a simpler game, it is a simpler story. And the reason I say that is the main big focus of Part 1, or Last of Us 1, whatever, is, let's put these two characters together that initially, I don't know if hate is the correct word, but they certainly don't like each other. They don't want to go on this journey together. Obviously, it's a bit sprung upon them from Marlena, and obviously Tessa's involved as well, and all that kind of stuff. The essential kind of idea you have, and again, not to simplify it, because like I just said, I've come away with a much, much bigger appreciation for part one, purely and simply because of what it does with Joel and Ellie's relationship. Because what it basically does is you start off with these two characters that don't like each other, and there's this very almost formal business approach between the two of them of like, yeah, your cargo, you don't mean it, from Joel to Ellie, is basically your cargo, you don't really mean anything to me, I don't want you to die, but I don't care about you, I don't have any feelings for you or towards you, you're just, you are a human, you are a person, but the only reason you're in my company, the only reason I even know you is because I'm shifting you as cargo. And then it's so masterfully done, and this is the best thing about Last of Us 1, is just bit by bit by bit by bit by bit, through whether it's full-on cutscenes, whether actually having full conversations, or all these little bits and pieces of conversation. Even when it comes down to throughout the game when you're picking up the Savage Starlight comic books, and I think near the start of the game when you start picking them up, he's like, oh, I've got another one of them comics, and she's like, cool, thanks. And I think there's bits later in the first game where Ellie, what was it? She's, I think it's where they get split off with Sam and Henry. And I remember, because this just happened to me a couple of days ago, I picked up one of the comics and Joel goes, oh, that's one of the ones, rather than him shouting out to her and going, hey, I found another one of them comics you've been reading. He says, oh, here's another one of them comics she likes, I'll pick it up for her, and kind of, that's not exactly what he says, but pick it up for her and kind of tell her about it later is very interesting. So even through bits and pieces like that, even through just picking stuff up, you just get these little bit after little bit after little bit after little bit. And I was about to say something about part two then. There's a little section in part two where Joel explains to someone about how he went across the country with Ellie. It's not really a spoiler. It's just it's a small part of a conversation Joel has with somebody, and he says about like, I went halfway across the country with a person. That's basically it. And you know he's talking about Ellie, because you don't really have, unless you know your American geography, which I don't. Because unless you track, like, oh, we went from here to here, that's halfway across America. It just emphasizes the sort of massive nature of their journey. And obviously it wasn't supposed to go that way, because if you rewind a little bit, I think it was Joel and Tess were only supposed to drop her off at the Capitol building, and obviously Tess's men were dead, and then obviously that's where Tess goes in the story, and it kind of goes from there. There's the whole bit later on I'm going to get into where obviously he tries to hand her off to Tommy, and I actually am going to play a little bit of a cutscene later on for that. But even if you rewind before he meets Ellie, and this is where it's just, could you go back to the start of the story, right? And it's, you really only, I think you can do it in about 20 minutes getting to Sarah's death. In the show it's a bit longer, because they obviously do the whole Watch storyline, and they build up the suspense a bit more of America's reaction to this situation, let's say. So they spend a bit more time there. But in the game, I think you can get there in about 20 minutes, because all you do is you watch the first cutscene, you run downstairs as Sarah, you go in the car journey, which you don't control, then you run as Joel with Sarah in your arms, which is, you can probably do that in about 2 minutes, apart from the bit where Tommy's like watching over you and he opens the door, you can do that in about 2 minutes. So you can probably get there in, I mean, speedrunners have probably got there in about 10 minutes, but because you spend a couple of minutes in the house with Sarah, walking around, obviously that's where Joel's gone, because he's like gone to see what the hell's going on. Then you walk downstairs, as soon as you get to the back door, Joel's there, then you don't control anything until, yeah, obviously you kick the window open thing as Joel, and then you carry, not to make it sound worse than it is, but you sort of carry Sarah to her death. It's literally about 15 minutes. But even in their first little conversation, when it's like, oh yeah, I say hardcore drugs, and there's little, like, little bits of humanity and humor in there, which is very, very important. You love these characters almost from like their first couple of lines that they exchange, and you care about this girl straight away. And I'll tell you something. Now, I've seen this poor girl die. Let me see if I can work out how many times. Okay, so 4 goes with Last of Us 1. That's including, so that's my first playthrough on PS4, my second and third playthrough, so 2 playthroughs on PS5, and then 1 playthrough on PS3. That's how many times I played the first game. So I've seen her die 4 times. Then once more, sorry, twice more in the TV series, because I saw both the episodes. Then I've lost count, but I've watched, like, obviously different people play the game. I've watched the Couch Soup episodes. I need to catch up on those once they catch up with, they're finished. Where Troy Baker and Nolan North are playing the game, and obviously she dies at the start of that. I've seen this poor young girl die a lot of times. But in terms of me on my own experiencing it, that's 6 times. Because it's 4 for the game, and then 2 watches of the show. And there's a lot of tragedy, obviously a lot of death in this game. Sam Henry, you've got Tess, then you've got obviously things with Frank. Obviously in the show it's Bill and Frank, that's arguably more impactful but in a different way. Then you've got, well, David dies, but you're happy about that one. You've got the death of the Doctor at the end of the first game, and obviously all the Firefly people. There's a little bit more weight to the Doctor's death because obviously he's the one that's trying to talk Joel down, whereas the others are just trying to shoot him and get him out of the building. You've got Marlena's death. You've got, am I missing anybody? Tommy doesn't die. Murray doesn't die. Marlena does. Ellie and Joel don't die. Yeah, all those characters I think are there at the end of the first game. But Bill is the only one that kind of, yeah, does die in the show, but doesn't die in the game. I'm trying to think if there's any other big characters. And yeah, it, like, because of what, essentially the chain of events of what Sarah's death does kicks off the entire thing. Because you think about it, if, okay, because the outbreak would obviously was still happening anyway. If, let's say Tommy, Sarah, and Joel, because obviously they all would have got away if Sarah didn't die. You then may have had something where, like, Joel, Sarah, and Tommy got away from the city. Maybe they never even joined the Fireflies. Maybe the mystery 20 years of what they did never would have happened. He never would have met Ellie, and obviously the story never would have happened. Somebody else would have had to have escorted her across the country, because Joel probably wouldn't have become a Firefly, and all that kind of stuff. So that is the, I don't know if linchpin's the right word, that is the thing that kicks off everything. But it's also because of how much that breaks Joel at the start, and then unknowingly meets his kind of second daughter and gets that second chance. Obviously that leads to his choice at the end of the first game. But because you feel the pain so much of Sarah's death, every single time without failure. And I get sad when I see, okay, Sam and Henry dying. Obviously that's very tragic. I'll talk specifically about that in a little bit. You got that all that stuff going on, and then you have again the thing with Frank and Bill, but that's different in the show and in the game. Then you have, like, so obviously David needed to die. Obviously you've got what's his name, James, he needed to die as well. Marlena sort of did. I didn't write Marlena's name down here, and I should have. I have some very big questions for or of Marlena as a character, which we can talk about a little bit as well. But man, I just, whether it's through watching people on YouTube play the game, or through season 1, or through playing the game, Sarah's death is just absolutely completely devastating every single time. And it adds more weight to it when you also, for those of you that haven't seen the behind the scenes stuff, just the process that Troy Baker went through to do that. Obviously the actress that played Sarah was a vitally important part of that as well, because she had to do her lines and make that kind of impactful in the whole performance capture and things. But it's interesting when, because I've heard the story 3 or 4 times in different places, of when they had a day where they filmed, they did a take of that like 6 times. And Troy always talked about, like, this, you know, Neil called him up one day and is like, hey, I want to redo a scene. He goes, oh, which scene? And he just looks at him and he goes, oh, no, not that one. And, like, wow, the process just to do that is just, yeah, as emotional as it is and as impactful as it is and devastating as it is just to watch that, to try to perform that and to be the one. Because if your performance doesn't come across, like, as much as this game is, you know, definitely leaning on Neil's writing and everybody else's writing, you've got to do the performances as well, because both of those things, especially for what this game goes for, it has to be at the top of its game. And although you could say, okay, Neil put the crew through quite a bit to get that done, that's probably, I mean, apart from the scene I'm going to get to later between Ellie and Joel, which I'll play here in a little bit, that's probably the most important scene in the game, I think, because you have to feel something for, obviously, this young girl dying, which is always obviously sad to see young people die, but how that kind of connects to Joel and what that does to Joel to then interact with Ellie and then go on this journey. And then, again, like I said, just bit after bit after bit after bit after bit, this relationship slowly building and building and building and building, which is what the entire game is. Now, as much as I love all the other characters as well, obviously Tess, you got Bill, you got everybody else that I just mentioned. And I don't mean to say this in terms of putting those characters down, because they all do serve their own individual purposes for what they do, both for the story and for Joel and Ellie's relationship. They're kind of checkpoints for the story, because again, the main number one thing you are experiencing and that had to work with this first game was Joel and Ellie's relationship, and getting that nailed down and getting that sort of, again, these two people that just don't really care about each other, this formal, like, business transaction of, hey, I'm supposed to protect you, I care if you die, but I'm not emotionally invested in you or care about you, you're not my daughter, you're cargo. And to then build that to, I know they don't show it in the TV show, but in the game, where he's kind of almost in the same scene, again, with Sarah, like, when he pulls Ellie out of the water before he gets attacked by the Fireflies. And there's even a couple of, I think there's more than once in the game, maybe, where it says, like, baby girl, I got you kind of thing. The same things he was saying to Sarah, he's now saying to Ellie. It's just such an incredible journey between the two of them. And again, has to come through Neil's performance, has to come through Ashley's performance, has to come through Neil's writing, and Troy and Ashley and everything that they're doing. So yeah, that's Sarah's death, I suppose. But every single time without fail, it does get you, and it's very important that they got that right. So as exhausting as it might have been for them to do it, I think like 10, 15 times or however many it was, they did it. Neil's determination to get that correct was not just justified, obviously he's the director of the game, if something's not right, he's going to get you to redo it, but just wanted to get it done over and over and over again, to just get it right. And even when they said, like, hey, yeah, we've got it, then they revisited it again, because who knows, we could have ended up with a, like, slightly different take that did, like, a 90% job, and it might not have come across quite so well, but good stuff. What I was saying earlier about the community, about 15 minutes ago, how can I kind of explain what I'm trying to get at here with that? I think, and this kind of applies to media across the board. Now, I remember when Ghost of Tsushima came out and Last of Us Part 2 came out. Now, as good as Ghost of Tsushima is, obviously that's from Sucker Punch, they came out within about a month of each other, and they got compared quite a lot, even though the only two similarities were they're both third-person action games and they're both Sony games. That's pretty much it. They weren't developed by the same people, didn't have the same people involved, completely different story, setting, characters, plot, everything was different. But the industry is what it is. And I remember when I played and finished Ghost of Tsushima, and it was a very good game. It's a very, very good game. And I kind of noticed, and this is going to, I'm going to feed this back into what I was saying with Last of Us 1. Because Ghost of Tsushima was a much more simple story than what Last of Us 2 was trying to do, and because some people couldn't quite get, or it didn't click with them what they were trying to do with Last of Us 2, they then thought that Ghost of Tsushima was better. Now, if you think Ghost of Tsushima is better than Last of Us 2, that's fine. It's up to you. But I do notice in the industry a lot of times, if there's two things that are remotely similar in any kind of way, and they come out near the same time, because some of those people that don't understand the more ambitious things, they tend to prefer and think that the simpler thing is better. Because they understand it better, and therefore they see like, oh, I don't get what this other thing was trying to do, therefore I like this other thing better. Now, I think for, again, if you're directly, to me, if you're directly comparing part one and part two, part one is a more simple game, but it uses fundamentally what part one did, and uses Joel's light at the end of the first game, and expand, it really does just expand it, and like branch it out way more. But part one and Last of Us 1 had the goal of, okay, we have to build this relationship between Joel and Ellie, and they absolutely nailed it. They couldn't have done it any better than what it did. Now, I think because of that, and because Last of Us 1 hasn't got as many complicated things in it as what Part 2 does, I think that is the reason some people prefer Part 1. Because I've noticed as well, because, okay, even with the gameplay, with Part 2, which again, the sequel's got new ideas, you're playing as Ellie more in the second game as well, because like, she's older and all that kind of stuff in Part 2. And although there has been a lot of compliments over the years about like, hey, even if you didn't click with Last of Us 2's story because maybe you didn't get it or you didn't get what they were going for or whatever, the gameplay's still incredible. And it was interesting when I went through the PS3 version of Last of Us 1, and because I'd obviously done the PS4, PS5 version, I thought like, okay, this game's still probably going to be very, very good, but it isn't going to be as technologically sort of up to date, because literally I'm playing on an older system, I'm playing an older game with older technology. It's just not going to play as well. Now, it's not to say that older games can't be better than newer games, but I'm talking about an older version of the same game, where there's three versions of the same game. I think in it, maybe this is because it has like, I don't know, Last of Us 1 on PS3 has this kind of original, because it is the original version, it has this like original classic charm to it. And I've talked about that a little bit on my classic review series, about these old films that do look old and all that kind of thing. But it's not sort of, all these films look old and they look bad because they look old. They have this classical charm to them, some films. Not all films are able to do that, but some old films have that to it. And I think in its own way, Last of Us 1 on PS3 has this kind of original kind of simplicity to it, because there really isn't a lot of menus, there isn't a lot of options, there's no like accessibility options or anything like that, because obviously that wasn't as big in the industry back then. But there was also something very interesting for me personally about, first of all, the switching over of the L1, R1, R2, L2, because the listen modes and run and aim and shoot are flipped over. So essentially you aim with L1, shoot with R1, reload with R1. But the way the PS3 controller kind of is, and the particular way that the L2 and R2 buttons are, it kind of made sense that it was like that. I don't know if that was the direct intention, but it kind of made sense that it was like that. But it was interesting to kind of see, again, it still is The Last of Us, but things look different, the UI looks slightly different, and all those kind of things. And I think it might be my favourite version of the game, just because it's got this just original kind of, again, not old, but classical feel to it. And it feels really, it's a very, very good game. Not just The Last of Us, but the specific PS3 version. So, yeah, it was interesting to do, and there's a few things that like fundamentally sort of function differently, and I found those to be very kind of, first of all, with like muscle memory, adaptability, things like that, it didn't take long at all for me to kind of get used to things, and how different things were. And there were a few points in the first couple of hours where I would like press the wrong button to aim or run, and I would be meaning to run and I would aim instead, but that was just down to muscle memory. See, now if I went and played the PS5 version, I would probably be doing the same mistakes the other way around, because the buttons are flipped back around. So yeah, but no, I really, really enjoyed playing the original version of that. Let's get into some of my notes for part one, and I have more notes for the PS3 version of Last of Us 1, because that's kind of the most fresh longer experience I had out of all this stuff. So going over to the documentary for a bit, they talked about, okay, starting a new IP, and I've heard this from, you know, many different people from the industry over the years, because there's no guarantee that a new IP is going to take off. You don't know that it's going to be a success. Obviously, we know now Last of Us is a raging success, and it's got a TV show adaptation and all this kind of stuff. You didn't know that that was going to happen, though. Things can fall flat on their faces. We've seen, obviously, some games recently fall flat on their face with new IP. But one, there was a lot of interesting things that come out of the documentary. We'll get into the notes I've got for it here. Somebody in there pointed out, like, for some new IP games, and this isn't specific to every game, sometimes they don't have a controller in their hand for 6 months because, I mean, okay, let's say Last of Us didn't exist. How do you just come up with something like that? And that is something I was, again, because I hadn't watched this documentary, I was curious to see kind of, okay, how did you come up with the story of, like, two people traveling together and this infected world? And how did you come up with the idea of the clickers? And not necessarily why were they called Joel and Ellie, but how did this idea start kind of coming to you? And I think it was Bruce Stradley in this documentary said about Neil pitched this game where, okay, they were going to do another Jack and Daxter. They didn't quite have the right idea. And they'd already spawned Uncharted, and Neil wanted to do something in the post-apocalyptic world, and he wanted it to be about this journey about two people. I suppose it kind of just stems from brainstorming and then expanding on it, and you're going to come across ideas that you scrap, ideas that you get rid of, and they talked about that with, like, the infected and how much of a human touch they wanted that to have and those sorts of things. And then they got into things like the growth and how do you come up with the design of a clicker. And obviously, you've got the evolution of, like, okay, the longer and longer these things are infected, they turn into different things. Because at the start, it's just a runner that is, you know, bloodshot, and kind of you can't quite tell sort of thing until you can, and then things get worse, and it just progresses and progresses from there. But the no controller in the hand for 6 months, I don't know if he was being, you know, exact about that, but I suppose before you get into designing, okay, how do we play this game? What is this game, first of all? Like, who are the characters? What is the world? What is the story? You do kind of have to do that first. Not for every game, but I guess for some games, especially for a game like this. Because you have to come up with the idea of, like, okay, what are you fighting? And if we want to put in our gameplay, like, the fundamental basics of our gameplay, like, okay, who are you playing as? What are you fighting? Where are you going? What are you doing? And it was interesting to see them slowly explain just how Neil came up with the idea and how, obviously, Bruce got involved, all that kind of stuff, and how we just sort of expanded from there. And one thing I really, really do love as well, because they talked about, obviously, the sound and the design for the infected. I know a lot of people get creeped out by, like, okay, how the infected sounds, and it's supposed to be horrible, it's supposed to be horror-based, and that sort of thing. I love how they did come up with the idea of that, of, like, these people putting in their own little sounds and things like that, and they eventually came up with this clicker sound. Because as horrible as it is, and as scary, or not really scary, as intense and horrifying as it is to hear infected in the game, because obviously you have to avoid them, I really, really do love the sound of the infected in this game. There's something very, just, I don't know, like, when I'm crawling around an area and I see a clicker do the, you know, the full-on proper screech that they do, but it's got, like, the click 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 build up and then they do the screech and then do, like, the full body movements, there's something really just awesome about that, like, the design, the sound. I think out of all the infected in this game, I think the clickers are probably my favorite. They're probably the more iconic ones as well, but yeah, I don't know. I know it's not like, you know, I don't fall asleep to clicker noises or something like that. It's not like a calming thing. It's just a very cool sound, I think. And it is nasty. It is horrible. And they showed, like, up close designs of the clickers, and it's nasty. Can you imagine getting bitten by something like that in the neck? I mean, you wouldn't know about it for too long because you'd bleed out and die. But yeah, it fits the world so well, and I think it's just really cool what they came up with there. Because even Craig, before, I think when they were talking about with him on the TV show, the very visceral nature of like the biting that these creatures do and all that kind of stuff. They do smack you and they do hit you with the hands as well, and then they eventually grab you and bite you. And how that worked, I guess that was more like how that worked with the cordyceps and the pulling out of the human flesh and things. That was really, really cool. But no, I love like the way they explain the sort of human touch and how that went into things, and then how they came up with the sound was quite fun as well. So those are some of my notes there. And then going to some gameplay stuff. One of the more fascinating things to me personally, I'd seen The Last of Us 1 on PS3. I'd seen a bunch of different people play it. I just never had played it myself. Is the kind of... Now, I've described it here as the L1 wind-up for the bow and arrow. Now, I think... I know definitely in Part 2, you press and hold L1. The character, whoever you're controlling, Joel or Ellie, brings up the bow. And that you then... Because of the way the triggers worked and stuff, you then press and hold R2 to then pull the bow back, sorry, the arrow back, and then let go of R2 to launch it. Whereas here, especially the way the actual reticle works, is you hold L1, and so on the PS3 version, you hold L1, Joel and Ellie, because you do play as both of them in the game, you get this like looping arc that eventually straightens itself out. Obviously you can upgrade that, you can make it go, you know, drawing speed, you can make that faster, all that sort of thing. But that actually draws the bow and the arrow for you in the same move. You then just tap R1 to release it. And I don't actually know which one I prefer and think is better. I think they've both got unique kind of interesting parts to it, because I guess in the other mechanical way, the holding L1 is a sort of, oh, you think there's an enemy there, you're just sort of prepping, but then you just have to do the arrow pullback, whereas with the PS3 version, because you just let go of L1 to cancel that, and it completely clicks out of it, and you can move on. But I remember when I used to see it, and I was like, oh, the arc thing, and you've got to like see where the arc ends. But if you do hold it for long enough, it does actually straighten itself out. It just takes longer depending on what upgrades you've got. I really liked it. I really, really liked it. And even in moments where I was shooting people from a bit of a distance and I had the more loop sort of thing, I actually found it quite fun to sort of try to line that up to sort of, obviously you want basically the highest point of the body, like either the top half of the body or the neck or the head. I found that actually really fun to kind of like line up and loop it up. It was really, really good. So I quite enjoyed that. That was, I think, one of the only weapons that was fundamentally kind of different. I guess they just had a different idea for how to draw the bow and arrow in the PS3 version. I wrote down here possibly my favourite version, something classical and original about it. I already talked about that. Let's get into characters a little bit. I wanted to talk about Sam and Henry, and something that I don't think I'd thought of this before I did this recent run through of the game. If you look at, okay, because the goal of Sam and Henry is different to Joel and Ellie. Obviously, you know, different backgrounds and that kind of stuff. Obviously, they're brothers and instead of like parental guardian and daughter figure, however you want to put it at that point in the story. Obviously, they're brothers. They're both guys. They're both black, obviously. Joel and Ellie are both white. There's, you know, simple differences between the two of them. And with Henry and Sam, it's simply a case of they're just trying to get away from what turns out to be Kathleen's group, the sort of, I think they're called scavengers in the game. That's all basically that they're trying to do. And they come across Joel and Ellie, whereas obviously Joel and Ellie, the whole cargo mission and that kind of stuff, so you've already got the differences there. But in terms of survival and what these two pairs are simply trying to do, which is fundamentally survive. Now, where you do have the interesting part where if Ellie gets bitten, assuming she doesn't get her throat ripped out or, like, pulled apart, she will be fine. She will bleed for a little bit, but she's immune, so she'll be fine. And obviously Joel looking after her. Where you've got... I can never remember which one's which. I do apologise for that. For the life of me, I can never remember which one is the older one and the younger one. No matter how many times I've played this game, been through this story, those are the only two characters I can't remember which names it is which. I think Henry's the older brother. I think Sam is the younger one. Apologies if I got that wrong, but that's like the only thing I never remember properly, and it really bothers me. If it bothers you, it bothers me as well. So, but I think Sam's supposed to be the younger one. Now, he does get bitten in the story, But obviously he's not immune, and that eventually leads to both Sam and Henry's death. And I guess the way I kind of viewed that was like, they are the example, and Bill kind of warned Joel about this, and we can talk about Bill in a minute, is like, because again, Ellie can die from infected if she gets too injured. She just can't get infected because she's immune. Now, Sam doesn't get like pulled apart or eaten, or not really eaten. Nobody really gets eaten in this world necessarily. He gets a simple little bite. I think on both versions in the show and the game, it's his left leg or his left ankle both times. I think it's the same. Obviously, if that was Ellie, like literally if you switched them around and that was Ellie getting bitten, it wouldn't matter and Sam and Henry would have survived. But it's kind of like, okay, this is what could happen to Joel and Ellie. Again, they could both die from infected. Joel can obviously get infected. He could get killed in a different way. Obviously, Henry unfortunately takes himself out because he's so horrified by his brother's death and everything. But that's an interesting example of like, okay, here's two pairs who've got some similarities. There's you know, the parental kind of guidance from both of them. Obviously, again, the two of those are brothers, so that part's different. But he's still kind of his parental guardian, in a way. He's looking after a young person, which is the same thing that Joel's doing. They're just doing it for different reasons. But it literally does kind of come down to, like, okay, here's what could happen to Joel and Ellie. Now, if in Last of Us 1, Ellie, let's say she got like shot or killed in whatever numerous ways she could get killed, would Joel do the same thing? Would he just kill himself? Because at that point it's like, okay, he would then be on his own. Tess isn't there. Tess is long gone. I guess he could go back to Tommy's and live there, but because that's what he becomes so afraid of, and that's why he makes a choice at the end, is like, no, I can't lose another daughter because it basically destroyed me before and turned me into this emotionless person who just didn't really care about anything. So he can't have that happen again. So maybe he would. Obviously we don't know what the answer to that is, but because there is obviously the bit in the show when he's got the scar on his head from shooting himself, and just before they got knocked out by the fireflies, he explains that was because eventually at some point he couldn't live with the grief of Sarah. So from maybe Pedro's character's point of view, Pedro's version of Joel, he probably would do that if Ellie died at that point in the story. I know it's not nice to think about. What I'm simply doing is comparing, like, okay, there's some similarities between Sam and Henry. Sam got infected and died, and Henry couldn't take it, and he unfortunately took his life in that scenario. Would the same thing happen if it happened to Joel and Ellie? That's all I'm trying to do. We don't know the answer, but I guess it would depend on what part of the story. So I don't know. Just touching upon what I said there with Bill, it's interesting where kind of obviously it happens more in the game than in the show, because Ellie and Bill actually meet. Is like he kind of tried to shove Frank away, and obviously Frank ended up going away and, you know, dying on his own. And Bill does warn Joel about, like, okay, if you're going to get into this, what was it he said? I think there's one thing good in this world, and that's one thing that people are good for in this world, and that's getting it killed. And he's worried about Joel in terms of, okay, I had somebody cared about, he died on his own, and I'm grieving for him in my own way. And he's very obviously sparse in his explanation as to who Frank is, but he says partner, and you can get the gist of that. But Bill does warn him early on of, like, okay, if you start caring about this person, it might hurt you, and then you see later on with Sam and Henry what that does to Henry. So, I mean, Bill is right about that, but Bill kind of approaches it, at least in the TV show, in the wrong way. Obviously, in the game, in the wrong way, because at least in the TV show, he does fortunately open up to Frank, and okay, it ends up with them both dying, but they both die probably as happily as you could in this world, together. So yeah, just some very interesting points there from Bill, because you look at the Bill version from the game, and I don't know if you'd paint him as like a sad, lonely man, but there's some loneliness to him, which you see, obviously, that get kind of alternated in the show. I mean, that kind of works that way in the real world, where people, like, you know, they start dating and they get into relationships. Maybe someone cheats on them or whatever, and they start having trust issues. But you have to look at that through a different lens in something like The Last of Us. But it's all about trust, letting people in. But then, like, if you don't let anybody in at all in terms of Bill's situation, he has people he knows. He knows Joel, he knows Tess, and, you know. But those, again, those are more kind of business people, which again kind of feeds interestingly back into Joel's initial relationship with Ellie, which was definitely much more business-based and not sort of emotional-based. So there you go with that one. But yeah, I look at Sam and Henry now as kind of, obviously they're both brilliant characters, but kind of this is a warning of what could happen with Joel and Ellie if things went more tragic. Which Bill is both correct about and also too cautious about, because you should try and let some people in, but obviously be cautious about who you let in. But then he got let down by Frank, so, you know, it's kind of a whole circle thing. So we'll talk about Ellie's growth as well, which I think is technically more interesting in the game, because you play as her and you kind of experience that with her. And there's obviously Left Behind, where you play as her throughout the whole thing. And then there's obviously the hunting sequence and the David sequence in the game. And it's interesting with, because obviously Ellie and Joel, as much as they do have the whole core thing of their relationship, which is the core of the first game, they do both have obviously their own individual journeys they're going on. And Ellie's, this is kind of, she's scared. I mean, all these characters are scared, but she's scared. She's young. She's inexperienced. She's absolutely got fighting spirit about her, which you see when, and this is something I really love in one of the animations. I noticed in the animations, both in Left Behind and in the David section, when I think you have to stab someone from behind, she kind of climbs onto, because she does it with the specific infected when you're running away with Riley at the end of Left Behind. And she has this very fierce kind of, I think it's in the trailer for one of the first games as well. And like the way she kind of climbs on the person or the infected, puts her right arm around the neck and like starts viscerally stabbing with the left hand. And there's this very kind of like vicious, strong nature to it. I think if you had a young character who was more sort of timid, more sort of afraid, I don't think they would do that. So that was great to see across, kind of, even when she's just dealing with David, like when she's locked in that cage and she starts getting more confident and all that kind of stuff. Just how that slowly, and I mean, you kind of see it in her very first scene, both in the show and in the game, when she tries to attack Joel, because she doesn't know who he is, and he just pops into this room and is like, who's this guy? I'm going to just attack him. I don't know who he is, because she's, you know, thinks he's a threat. So even from moment one with Ellie, you do see that. And it's interesting with, I think in the David section, what was it that you do? There's a bit that you do, and I think she says to herself, like, "What? Hey, Joel kind of taught you, what would Joel do here?" Indicating that, like, okay, she has been listening this whole time. And she's been learning from him. And again, that feeds really well into part two and how she gets older and gets more mature and all that sort of stuff. So that's really, really great. But that's what I was going to touch upon. In the documentary, I love the way that both, I can't remember what Neil said exactly, but the way Troy and Ashley talked about Ellie. And for some reason, I didn't realize this or think about this until they mentioned it. And it kind of clicked it in my brain. If you think about, obviously, you do have your adult badass female characters, you've got your damsel in distress characters, you've got your love interest characters, you've got your eye candy characters, all sorts of different types of female characters. But something that's kind of particularly interesting about Ellie, now when they mentioned this in the documentary, I was trying to think of other characters that are similar in the same way, and the only one I could think of was Judith from The Walking Dead. Now, let's see if any of you can think of, like, similar characters in this exact category. So what you have with Ellie is, again, someone who's not, first of all, she's a 14-year-old, so she's a teenage character. She obviously isn't eye candy. She isn't sexualized or anything like that. Obviously, that would be very wrong in this case. So that's already not one of them boxes ticked of like, hey, here's a sexy female character for the, you know, the males to have the googly eyes for. That's not what Ellie's about in this game at all. So you don't have that. You don't have that cliche there. Not that that's a bad thing to do, because there are some characters who are put into stories kind of for that reason. She's a 14-year-old who is, I've always said that she is the lead protagonist, even though you do mainly play as Joel in the first game, and some people think he's the main character. They're both the main characters, but the story fundamentally doesn't happen without Ellie. And Sarah's not immune, so that wouldn't have worked, although we don't know. That wouldn't have worked the same way. So the story fundamentally doesn't happen without Ellie. But, so you've got that going on. Then you've actually got a teenage lead protagonist. That doesn't happen very often. You've got, like, teenage characters that are in stories. Like, in The Walking Dead, you do get a fair few towards the end, that, like, have grown-up versions and that sort of thing. But, yeah, you have her as like a young teenage kind of lead protagonist. She's not a sexualized character. She's not a damsel in distress. Even those two things on their own are very, very rare. And for her to not be this like scared little kid sort of thing. I'm trying to think if it is, apart from maybe, again, Judith from The Walking Dead. And obviously you have some versions of characters that are, like, younger versions. So, like, Leia from Obi-Wan, who's obviously supposed to be the young version of Princess Leia. But that's not really the same thing as, like, okay, you start out with this character at this age and you build forward. Because when we first saw Leia and Princess Leia in Star Wars, she was already an adult character. Yeah, you just don't really see that very often. And even in terms of something I've wanted anywhere in entertainment to do for years, which is have your story start out with your adult characters, have those characters have children, spend seasons aging them up and developing those as characters, and then literally hand either do a sequel show or sequel seasons where the original characters take a backseat and physically pass the torch in a way where those now characters who were young, those are now adult characters, but you've watched them grow and grow up throughout the seasons. They then take over the story because they then become the adult lead protagonist. I don't know too many shows, because the Arrowverse was almost about to do that with the Green Arrow and the Canaries. You had Oliver Queen's, was it Oliver Queen? Yeah, Oliver Queen's daughter, who became the new Green Arrow, and Oliver got older and he sort of retired and all that. And then, oh my god, what was her name? I know she's played by Kathleen something. I've forgotten a name from the show. She became like the lead protagonist, and they were going to do a sequel show called Green Arrow and the Canaries, and she was going to be the lead protagonist. I'm really struggling to think of examples where that's properly happened and been properly followed up with or followed through with. Not the exact same thing here, because you have Joel and then he, you know, builds up Ellie and kind of teaches her stuff and all that sort of thing. And obviously she becomes older in part two. But to me, she's already the lead protagonist because the story doesn't happen without her. Whereas in Arrow, you don't start off with Oliver's daughter. She's not even born at the start of the series. So, yeah, and Judith isn't even the same example for that, because she isn't in season one of The Walking Dead, and you do have Rick as the lead protagonist. But yeah, I'm trying to think across TV, games, and films where you have a teenage female lead protagonist who is the main protagonist, but is a teenage female lead character. But not the sort of young adult shows where you have like your high schooler kids, because those are already 16, 17, 18 years old. And that's different. And there's also, that's the group of them, like Stranger Things or something, for example. But a story where you have, and I know that you do have Sarah as well, a story where you have, obviously got Sam as well, but a story where you've got her surrounded by other adult characters, because there's Tess, Bill, Milena, Joel, obviously, and other characters. So, yeah, I thought that was a very, very interesting point from them as well, and that's something I've not thought about in that specific way, so that was interesting. Now we're going to scroll down. We've reached that point of the podcast. Something very else very interesting from the UI with the PS3 version. So, and again, apologies for forgetting her name, because I saw so many different people in these documentaries and in these interviews. I can't remember everybody's name. They showed this version, like, you know, when you press one of the directional buttons to bring up your weapons, and then you usually hold X, you can switch the different things out, but you can very quickly switch between the two short guns and the two long guns, and obviously you can go to your other equipment, and you do that by, you can still walk around and you can do that with the D-pad or the directional buttons, whatever. And she showed this version on the screen where instead of this little nice fitting in menu in like the bottom right hand corner that you get that we all are very used to, there was this great big menu which took up like, I think it'd be a quarter of the screen in the top right, where like Joel would still kneel down, still get the backpack out, obviously Ellie does that as well in the games, but there was like this, it was the same kind of menu, but it was this big, I think it was blue or maybe black, it was a bit of blue and a bit of black. This massive menu that came up that like took up too much of the screen, and she showed exactly, and she was like kind of called back in and said like, hey, we're not happy with the UI, can you change it? And it was good that they did, because the UI that we have now, specifically for swapping weapons, is much, much better. But it was a little bit like when you do open your bag for crafting, and that takes up more of the screen, but then there's more information that you need to see, like how much stuff you've got and all that, and you're not quite supposed to do that as much on the fly or whatever. It was more like that, but for changing weapons, and it just took way too much room up on the screen, and she was called back in, and they said that they weren't happy with what she did, and yeah, it's good that they probably wouldn't have shipped it with that version. So it was good that they did change that. But I'd never known about that before. So again, new information for me. But I'm glad as well she didn't seem bitter about it. She didn't seem like, oh no, my old idea was better. She did kind of come back and be like, because she shows you in the video, in the documentary, about like, look how awkward this is to do, I made a mistake. But it's like, fair enough. You know what I mean? So that was very interesting to see. But I couldn't have imagined playing Last of Us with that great big thing on the screen. It would, pretty bad. But yeah, that was an interesting bit to kind of find out about. And then the last point I want to touch upon with Last of Us 1 on PS3 is, sorry, I did not look at my own notes properly. The crouching combat. Now, this is very interesting if we go back to the discussion about, obviously this was after Last of Us 2 came out, so in 2020, when they went to remake Part 1, they wanted to use the technology from Part 2, put that in Part 1, and put out a fresher, better version, an updated version of The Last of Us 1. Now, one of the things that Ellie can do, because she's more agile in Part 2, is she can dodge and she can go prone, so fully, obviously, lay down. And there was things like tall grass that they put in the game where you can crawl through again. Sequel, new ideas, different ideas, that sort of thing. And it works brilliantly for Part 2. What's interesting about Part 1, though, is I remember when it was coming out, and I think like the controls were leaked for Part 1 at one point, and it showed like that you couldn't go prone and you couldn't dodge. It's interesting when I look at, and I pointed this out when I did play Part 1, the PS5 Part 1 when it came out, and I commented on it at the time, but it was interesting to experience it again, obviously, on the PS3 version. If you look at the environment that you have when you're in most combat scenarios, there's a lot of boxes, and you do literally have this game where you're playing as a guy who's much bigger than Ellie, physically bigger, obviously he's older, he's a fully grown man, and he is crouching, behind these boxes, and he doesn't. Joel has never laid down in any of these games before. Not in No Return. Not in Part Two. Not in anything. It's just not something that he does. It's actually interesting. I think in No Return, when you play as the different characters, they each have their pros and their cons. Like Tommy's really good at sniping, all that kind of stuff, and Joel's con that he can't do is he can't dodge and he can't lay down, which is interesting to fit that in back in with Part One's gameplay. But if you look from the scenarios where you're shooting people or when you're doing melee combat, there's crouching boxes for everybody to stand behind, sorry, to crouch behind. So you are kind of doing this slow crouching movement around these big boxes. And I think the basic idea that they were kind of going for was like peeking cover and stuff like that, because you see people, you have like, let's say, three enemies in front of you. And it would be like a sort of, what's that game called with a hammer? You know those arcade games where like the things pop up and you have to, when one of them peaks up, you got to sort of hit it. It's a little bit almost like that, where the way Joel can sort of aim, and he doesn't have to necessarily, he doesn't sort of like mount the cover and then aim above it. He just sort of slightly aims his gun above it, which is what the enemies do. And it's this game of like who's going to peek first, who's gonna... I think it's really, really good, and I really, really enjoyed doing it again in the PS3 version. And it's very, very satisfying. I found particularly with the rifle, when you've got the circle reticle there, and you have to try and guess, like, okay, which one of the enemies is going to peek the head out next? And you're sitting there and you're waiting for them to peek it out, and the head pops up, and you just do a lovely little headshot, or not little headshot, you just do a lovely headshot, and you just kind of, you take that one out. I think it's really, really satisfying to do. And then you've also got the bit of, like, where enemies start flanking you, they notice where you've gone, and you can do the kind of almost Gears of War style kind of sprint between. There is something very Gears of War about it, and I love Gears of War anyway, and it fits very well with that. The only difference with that is with Last of Us, you can't click into cover, but you don't sort of need to. Now, if you gave Joel the ability to go prone in these games, you could still do the box cover thing, which is still a thing in Part 2, but it's just done a little bit differently, because you have things like tall grass, you have more open areas for Ellie to kind of crawl through. Which, again, sequel, different ideas, different whatever, right? And then you can kind of do the sort of run, circle back round, or find a new position, try to lose them, maybe throw a brick or a bottle, obviously, that kind of thing. I think it's really, really good. And although it would still work with going prone, I don't think that you'd get any specific advantages by going prone with Joel in The Last of Us 1. Whereas Part 2, again, long grass, you can kind of crawl through that, be all stealthy, and do that kind of thing. So it actually works well there. So, there you go. The one thing that keeps bothering me with the combat, and maybe it's just, I think it's just a me problem, to be honest, and I remember moaning about this in my review of Part 1, is, because in Part 2, when you've got sections where you're playing as Ellie, because again, you've got the different idea of she's more agile, she's quicker and all that sort of thing, she can dodge. You can apparently do, now I say apparently because I've never actually done this before in Part 1 ever, in the four playthroughs, is when an enemy's hitting you with something or punching you, you can counter. I have never seen the triangle counter prompt come up ever in my playthrough. And I've done bits where I've held pipes, I've held bits with like sticks with like, you know, the scissor attachment bits and stuff like that. I've done the fist to fist combat. I have never in my playthrough once, and I've been pressing triangle and like nothing is happening. It's really, really weird. And I've seen videos of people doing the counters. It's basically someone will like swing a pipe at Joel. He'll put two hands on it, obviously, because you've got the strength of Joel there. That's where you have the differences in the gameplay. And he'll kind of grab the pipe with two hands and sort of push them back. I've never been able to do that in my playthrough for some really odd reason. I don't know why. Yeah, it's really odd. Really, really odd. But I'm going to put that down to a me problem, because I've seen it done. I just have never... Not that I need a triangle prompt to come up, because I've both waited for the triangle prompt to come up and also tried to press it when I've held the various different amount of weapons. And it never happens. Maybe I'm just pressing it at the wrong time or something, but it really annoys me. Because when you get kind of stun-locked in a way, where an enemy's beating the crap out of you in part one, that can take off like 90% of your health very quickly, because they just, you've got these big men that are just wailing you with punches. So I don't know, but I'm going to put that down to more of a me problem. All right, let's move on from that to, I've only got a couple of notes here. Oh yeah, I've wrote down here Last of Us. So Last of Us on PS5. The two things I didn't do, by the way, just to point these out very quickly, and I didn't do these because I just didn't feel that they were necessary, was replay Last of Us 1 on PS4 and replay Last of Us 2 on PS4. But because I'd already played the half that I wanted to of part 2 on PS5, I just didn't feel the need to do that again on PS4 and then go through Last of Us 1 again on PS4. The only reason, like I said, I did it with the 3 was because I'd never played it on the 3 before, so that was a fresh experience. And I didn't have that on my mind where I went to start doing this, because, as I said, I started with the PS5 version. I never had the intention of playing the 4 or the 3 version, but I just thought, as I went through the process, it might be interesting to play the version of 3, because I'd never done that before. Whereas both versions of both games on PS4 I'd played before, so I just felt like it would have been just, yeah, not a waste of time, just unnecessary, just very unnecessary. So, yeah, here's something that I did in, I don't know if you can do this in the PS3 or the PS4 version, but you can do it in the PS5 version, because I did do it. Now, I actually did this by complete accident. So, I was playing as Joel in part one, as you do, and I had a brick in my hand, as you would. Now, I had the brick equipped because I think I mucked up a stealth section. I went to, like, go and stun someone or something like that. I think it was a clicker. And I think I went to go and stun it, and it got too close to me, and I did have, like, a pipe or something like that on me, and I instinctively pressed square, because that's what you would do to go to melee combat them. And what he did, and this is on my, so this would be on my third playthrough, because I hadn't done the PS3 version yet, so this was on my third playthrough, is he smacked to death and killed this clicker. It was a fresh clicker. I don't think it had been damaged yet, although I did have Bill. It was in the Bill section when you're running through the high school. I don't think he had shot the clicker yet, but I might be wrong about that, because obviously your companions shoot for you as well, as Bill does. So I don't know if Bill had shot the clicker yet, so I think it was a fresh version. I had the brick equipped because I went in there to, I think I went in the building just to throw it and then distract the enemy, but I got caught and I was like, okay, screw it, I'm going to run up to this clicker and I'm going to smack them with my melee weapon. And what Joel did instead, I guess because he had the brick in his hand already because I had it equipped, smashed this clicker to death with the brick. Obviously the brick was destroyed, but the clicker was then dead. Never knew you could do that. Never knew you could do that in this game. I don't know if you can do it in the PS4 version. Did I try doing that on Last of Us 2? I don't think I tried doing that on Last of Us 2. I'm assuming if you can do that in Last of Us Part 1, then you can probably do that in at least the PS5 version of Part 2. Maybe even in the PS4 version of Part 2. But I don't know. The only version I've ever done that in is the PS4 version. Sorry, the PS5 version of Part 1. And I never tried to do it on my PS3 version. I probably should have tried to do it, but I never did. Don't know if you can do the same thing with a bottle. Obviously, a person you can smack over the head with the bottle, but a brick has got, like, I'm assuming with something like an infected, if you're going to hit them with a bottle, I don't know that's going to damage them as much, but a brick, obviously, it's got, there's more force there, isn't there, with a brick. And yeah, it killed the clicker. I thought, oh, that's really cool. So, again, I did kind of go into this experience, this whole project, thinking like, oh, am I just going to be kind of retreading steps I had before? But as you've seen over this hour, 17 minutes so far, I saw new things, I've learned new things. There was even a couple of little areas in part 1 and part 2, I can't remember the specifics of them, that I hadn't been to in before. There's a few little doors, a few little bits and pieces that I hadn't visited before, so there was new stuff here. There was new stuff, which was interesting. Alright, let's take a quick little break, shall we? And this isn't going to be a break for, because I might put more than one ad break in here, I think, because it's going to be a very long podcast. I know I don't usually do that, but I'm going to do it for this one. So, actually, should I put the ad thing in, or should I just, I'm just going to edit. I'm not going to be greedy. I'm just going to edit here. So, I'll be back in a moment, and we can move on from, because that's all I really have to talk about for Last of Us on PS5. Obviously, it's upgraded version, all that sort of thing. And then I only actually got a few. I know I spent a lot of time talking about the PS3 version of Part 1, but I've got a couple of notes from Season 1 and then a few notes from Last of Us 2, which is going to be where the spoiler section kicks in. But I'll be back in a minute. Alright everybody, I'm back. We're back with the technically second half. This is not the spoiler section yet for Last of Us Part 2, so don't go running away just yet. A bit I almost forgot to do, because I spoke about this earlier but I didn't actually write it down. I said I was going to play a little clip from Last of Us Part 1, and one thing I kind of tried to do. Now, there's a lot of obviously big key moments in this game. There's obviously Sarah's death, there's the ending, there's the lie, there is Joel's choice, even the car journey back with the two of them, where he lies to her in the car and then kind of lies again when they meet at the end of the game on the little hill. There's lots of moments with Sam and Henry. There's lots of moments in this game. But and this also stuck out to me because Troy Baker mentioned it on the documentary. And it's called Joel and Ellie's Argument. It's technically sort of an argument. So this is when Joel is kind of fearing of like, okay, what if the same thing happens to this girl that happened with Sarah? I wouldn't be able to deal with that, which again feeds back into what I was getting into with Sam and Henry. And Ellie kind of finds out about this in different versions in the show than in the game, but runs off to this building, and she finds this book which talks about like how girls her kind of age used to think when they're in the sort of normal world before the apocalypse. I think the reason I kind of chose this, it really does kind of encapsulate sort of not what the series is about necessarily, because again the series is about this journey between the two of them and their relationship, but it just stuck out to me because it was sort of a reflection of not how small our problems are compared to theirs, because obviously we have a lot of problems in the world that we're living in. There's many, many problems, but they're living in this world which we kind of see through a different lens with different problems, because we don't have to deal with, you know, I mean, we deal with infections, but we don't deal with infected. We don't have clickers running around, thank God, because we, you know, don't need any more problems in this world, do we? And obviously we deal with very serious things in the world. There's wars and there's, you know, murder and all kinds of terrible things that happen in our world. But for her to read this book about, like, what girls her age used to think and what their problems used to be, because she says what skirt goes with what shirt and, you know, what they're going to say to the boys they have crushes on and that sort of thing, and how she views that and how it's kind of, to her, that's just nonsense, that's not an issue. And obviously there's little bits of conversations like that when, obviously, with Left Behind, when she's with Riley, but that's in kind of a different contextual situation, and at that point she hadn't been on the journey that she had up until this point in this scene. So I'm going to play this for you in a moment. But I thought it was just an interesting, it's just an interesting point for them in the game. And again, it gets back to Joel, because even for this point in the game, because in this point, Joel's like, no, you're not my daughter, I'm not your dad. And, because his whole thing is like, do you realise how important you are? You've just run off, anything could have happened to you, that sort of thing. And again, kind of feeds back into what Bill was warning him about, which is getting attached to people. Even though that in this scenario, that's not him getting attached to Ellie. It's more worried about, like, he understands the severity of, at the time, what Ellie's purpose was. Now we can debate Ellie's purpose in terms of her immunity and all those sorts of things. Which, again, gets touched upon in Part 2. Not really a spoiler. They talk about, obviously, what happened at the end of Part 1, because that's what you do when you're following up with the stories. You talk about the thing that happened before. But yeah, it was just an interesting reflection. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking for 2 minutes because it's a 2 minute scene. You can, of course, enjoy the writing here. You can enjoy Troy and Ashley's performances and a little reflection for yourselves on this scene. So I'm going to play it now.
Is this really all they had to worry about? Boys? Movies? Deciding which shirt goes with which skirt? It's bizarre.
Get up. We're leaving.
And if I say no?
Do you even realize what your life means? Huh? Running off like that, putting yourself at risk? It's pretty goddamn stupid.
Well, I guess we're both disappointed with each other then.
What do you want from me?
Admit that you wanted to get rid of me the whole time.
Tommy knows this area.
Oh, better fuck than... that.
Well, I'm sorry. I trust him better than I trust myself.
Stop with the bullshit. What are you so afraid of? That I'm gonna end up like Sam? I can't get infected. I can take care of myself.
How many close calls have we had?
Well, we seem to be doing all right so far.
And now you'll be doing even better with Tommy.
Not her, you know.
What?
Maria told me about Sarah.
Ellie? And... you are treading on some mighty thin ice here.
I'm sorry about your daughter, Joel. But I have lost people, too.
You have no idea what loss is.
Everyone I have cared for has either died or left me. Everyone fucking except for you. Don't tell me that I would be safer with someone else, because the truth is I would just be more scared.
You're right. You're not my daughter. And I sure as hell ain't your dad. And we are going our separate ways.
Get it together. We're not alone.
There are two walking in.
There's more inside already.
Oh, he was loading up that powerful pistol, the one-shot pistol. He was ready to take him out. Anyway, that's such an incredible scene. For some reason, I forget about how good that scene is until I re-see it every single time, but... I spoke about checkpoints earlier and how kind of, again, not to insult those other characters, but they're sort of checkpoints for where Joel and Ellie are at in their relationship and kind of how whoever that character is they meet in the checkpoints, you know, affects what's going on and everything. That's also really good, because that's just, I think that's just past like the midway point of the game, because episode 5, which I guess is roughly the halfway point, is just after Sam and Henry, which obviously gets referenced there. It's interesting that Ellie there was literally referencing the same thing I was talking about, in terms of her saying, like, I can't end up like Sam. But, which again, is very true, but the thing Joel was worried about is not you getting bitten, it's you getting killed, which you could have done when you ran off. I mean, there's lots of bits about that scene that I like, but one really kind of interesting bit is because Joel was so damaged and broken from Sarah's death, and what was it? I think she says at first, like, hey, I've lost people too, and he says, you have no idea what loss is, which is probably one of the best lines in the game. And he says, everybody I've loved has either, you know, everybody I've cared for has either died or left me, which is exactly true. Everybody except for him. Yeah, and it's just, you know, so don't tell me that, or because I'd just be more scared. Both have very, very valid points. It does seem harsh the way that Joel says to her, like, you have no idea what loss is, because she does. I mean, I don't think actually at that point, I think she might have, like, mentioned Riley at some point, but she doesn't actually explain what happened between her and Riley until the end of the game, does she? So that's where they talk more about loss and, you know, all those fun things to talk about in life. But yeah, that's one of the interesting kind of, because she makes her own interesting choice there in terms of, I'm kind of fed up with this. I'm going to run away. And what that means for her and Joel's relationship. And then they kind of... This is almost like a sort of them... Well, it is obviously them talking to each other about what's going on. But it's them kind of talking to each other about where they're at with each other. Obviously, she touches upon a nerve because she brings up Sarah. But it's kind of almost important that Ellie does that. Especially the reason she's bringing up Sarah and all that kind of stuff. So... Yeah, yeah. Again, there's tons and tons of excellent lines and scenes in this game, but that's one of the ones that intrigued me a bit more, I think. So, yeah. All right, let's move on from there and talk about season one. Obviously, I've referenced it a few times, brought up a couple of different bits and pieces. I've put down here, I've watched all the Blu-ray extras, kind of talked about that already. There's one main key thing. I mean, I'm not going to like recap the episodes or anything like that because we all know what happened in the episodes. There's one interesting way one of the things I kind of wanted to do with this project particularly was like, okay, compare a few different things. So compare the gameplay from 1 and 2, which I think I've done that. And the key sort of differences there. And then also the differences between, okay, you're being told the same story with season 1, but it's not copy and paste. It's not the exact same thing. It's got certain gameplay sections that are cut and things like that. Now, this didn't occur to me particularly. I mean, I remember mentioning it when we reviewed episode 8, me and David, and I mentioned the big, like, bloater section that's cut out. Now, I'm trying to remember the exact way that this happens in the show. But, so in the show, Ellie, obviously, is hunting the deer. It's obviously Bella Ramsey. Comes across James and David, same way, pretty much the same way that she does. The whole put one between the eyes thing. And there's a deer there, and they're negotiating, and medicine comes up. And then they drag it to this cabin, they start a fire. James goes off to grab the medicine, they come back. But then between that happening, obviously you do this whole gameplay section, which it makes sense for why it's there, because that's when the infected show up. And it's an interesting test and conversation between the two of them, between David and Ellie. Like, they kind of have to trust each other in this situation, because even if one of them goes, screw you, I'm going to push you into a clicker, that means that the other one is just simply less vulnerable. Like, there's certain stages in this infected world where, not for somebody that you don't trust, but for somebody that you don't really know, because they don't really know each other. They don't know each other at all, do they? It's not a question of, oh, I've known you for a while, I don't trust you. They don't really know each other at all. But it's like, okay, now we have to kind of trust each other, because if we don't, then we'll both end up dead. Now, what's interesting with the show, because I'm trying to remember from, they sit down, they do the fire. Obviously, in the show, the infected don't come, and then James comes back eventually. And the moment is the same from when David brings up, like, oh, I sent a bunch of my men, they got slaughtered by this man, and then he does the thing where he goes, and the young girl. Then that's where Ellie realises she gets up and she basically kind of runs off, because I think she runs back to Joel to kind of, I think she has the medicine at that point, doesn't she? And then she runs back to Joel to sort that out, but then it becomes a case where she gets hunted by David and James and all their group. But, so here's the very specific way that I look at this, right? Let's say you have a line, not a line from a show, you have a straight line, right? And in the game, you have bits where there's bits coming off the lines, and those branch out into gameplay sections that then loop back round to a story point, and the story point is the same point from where the show continues to go. Now, it does keep some of those in, and what it also kind of does is where you have, okay, they sit down together, James goes off to get the medicine. So in the game, this would be where the line is still going straight, the same thing is still going to happen, where you end the episode and the story beat at the same point. David's dead, James is dead, Joel's come along, got your baby girl kind of thing, whatever, and then they go off together. You still end up at that same point, you just get there slightly differently, but then you still have the confrontation in the fire building bit, you still have the conversation about everything else. And this is where it's interesting for the and where the show can kind of take advantage of time here, because where you have these sections in the game of what, 10 to 20 minutes, depends on what bit you're at and how long it takes you to get through. Where it doesn't really make sense for the show is where, like, okay, you're playing as Joel and he's slowly walking his way through this town for 15 minutes and he's shooting people, picking things up, and that's what you're doing in the game. Now, not only would that not really fit for what the show does, it also is technically a waste of time. And where you can chop all those little bits out and use that to give the scene with David and his people when they talk about what they're doing, all those extra bits and pieces that you've got. But what you essentially kind of do, okay, let's go back to the straight line. Now, imagine the very specific bit where James has gone away to get the medicine. As that happens, they're continuing to have a conversation. The infected show up, so they have to fight. And now you get this line that branches off from this other line. The other line's still going. It's still going. But you then get this branch. And the branch is then when, okay, this literal other door in this building opens up. Because you go through this, like, bridge part, don't you? Well, first of all, you do the invisible timer thing where you kill as many enemies as you can until David goes, okay, we're being overrun. Let's open the door. Let's go through this bridge. And then obviously you get to the bit where the bloater is. You go through all that bit. And then you eventually circle back round. It sort of gives the player something to do and a way to give bits of dialogue while you're doing gameplay stuff, which again is specific to the game and not what the show was trying to focus on. I know that there were some comments in season one about that, like, oh, there wasn't enough infected, that sort of thing. But in some situations where you do have an infected in this game, it is, and I mean this in the most respectful way, it is video gamey. Like, the idea always that, like, you're in a room, there's going to have a flood of enemies, there's going to be a kind of sort of invisible timer, or a certain amount of enemies. Once you've killed those enemies, or you've killed enough of them to where the timer's gone, the next bit then opens up and you can continue from there. A TV show just wouldn't do that, and the act of watching an episode doesn't work the same way as that, because that just doesn't happen, because you have scenes and not gameplay sections. But one interesting part with that is, like, okay, where you've literally got this kind of loop, again, straight line, one branches off, it literally loops back round, because they literally and physically, they open this door, they go down the bridge, they deal with all the infected, all the bloated stuff, all that way. They come back, I think, the exact same way. They get back to where the fire is. You've looped back round to then when the second part of the conversation happens, where she brings up the old man and the young girl, and that's where she realizes what's going on. James comes back. David says, lower the gun, give her the medicine, and then she runs off. But what you can then do, where you've got the time, where you've got the gameplay stuff happening, you can snip that off. And I don't know where you would put that in relation to, like, I guess you could put it, you could trim a bit of the straight line and put that in there as, like, the extension. Because what the show kept doing was, like, okay, rather than spending 10 to 15 to 20 minutes with Joel killing infected, which we don't need for the show, rather than just completely cutting that out and not adding to it, where you've got the extension parts of the show, you can then use that to literally extend these character stories and branch them out more, which is where you get David and his group. I think that actually makes David in the show a better version, and I remember saying that in episode 8. But it was interesting to think of it that way of, like, and what I was kind of thinking of, I don't know how many of you have seen Loki, but there's this thing in Loki where they've got the TVA, and there's this explanation at one point with the multiverse, that, like, you've got the main branching path, and then you've got all these multiverse bits and pieces. Imagine it the same way, but there's not as many, obviously, branching paths. There's, like, one or two bits per episode, or one major bit per episode, and you can snip them off, but then you can use that time and that piece, almost imagine it like a piece of string, and you put that in to extend, let's say, giving Bill his episode, or, again, the stuff with David, or, like, other bits and pieces as well. Or spending more time with, like, Sam and Henry, as opposed to just the perspective from Joel, all that sort of thing. So it's a very good, very interesting way to do that. But yeah, the way I kind of thought about it was, like, this other loop that branches off for this gameplay bit, which literally in the scene that I'm talking about comes back to the same point, which continues from there, and then the episode ends the same way. Which again, so you're not changing the story, you're changing certain parts, but you're still getting to the same checkpoints, which is done very, very well. That was kind of, it wasn't that I didn't take much away from my second watch of season one. I still very much enjoyed it and still enjoyed seeing, like, going from the game pretty much straight into the show and then noticing obvious differences straight away. I don't need to tell you what all of those were because we have already talked about them when we reviewed season one, and everybody else has mentioned them before, so I'm not going to really bring them up again here. I put as well, I've watched like a dozen interviews, bits and pieces, behind the scenes videos, old interviews, etc. Yeah, again, can't remember everything from everything because I just watched a dozen different videos. And again, YouTube just kept feeding them to me. I was like, oh, there's another 5-minute one, another 10-minute one. I'll just, you know, stick them on and watch them kind of thing. So, but again, one thing I was trying to do, which I can't complete yet, which is, okay, play the first game, watch the first season, realise what they're trying to do. Then play through the first half of Last of Us 2 and try to equate it in the same way. Of like, okay, where do I think the branching bits are going to be snipped off and bend around and, you know, all those sorts of stuff. But the only and I have actually done that twice technically, although with this project and this rewatch or this revisit, it was, okay, rather than just play part two and try to figure out what they might do with the show, go through the example they've already given you, which is play part one and watch season one so you can see what they've done there and try to think of it in the same way when you go through part two. But I can't complete that yet because I haven't seen season two and I don't know what that looks like yet. I can generally only do guesswork with that, which we'll get into in some later points. Because, again, because I'm such a fan and I enjoy so much of the stuff, it was like, okay, try to figure out where they might cut certain bits, but then because I'm enjoying it so much, I'm like, okay, I don't know where you would cut what out. And again, certain obvious gameplay bits and stuff, but because all of it's so good, I'm like, okay, now you probably wouldn't cut that bit out, but then realistically, But I guess because I haven't got the mind or the job of Neil and Craig of like, okay, let's go through the game and work out what to keep in, what to take out, what extra bits to put in. I can guess how that process might work, but I don't know how it might work. I will probably get into that more on my... I'm going to do a spoiler preview for season two for one of the next podcasts for The Last of Us season two. I might do that after the next trailer comes out, assuming that we hopefully get one eventually. But to try to actually go, because what I'm going to do in that maybe spoiler preview is write down the checkpoints of part two story and try to do the guesswork there of, okay, where could episode one end and all this sort of stuff. And all. But then again, I heard that, what was it that I heard like last year? That one of the episodes is going to be like an hour and 45 minutes. For season two. I don't know which episode or where or what bit that's gonna be from. Again, I could guess. That might be maybe the premiere or something, because again, if we remember the premiere for season one, that was one of the longer episodes, that and the Bill episode as well. So yeah, because that could have like two or three different checkpoints in again, that was a rumor, so we'll see kind of how that goes. But in terms of me doing the guesswork right now, I was like, oh, you went through the example of what season one and game one looks like together. What do I think that will look like for part two? It's just too difficult to guess, and there's just too many bits that I wouldn't take out or know what to do with. And also the additional bits for the bits that they're going to put in, I can guess which characters that's going to be for, but that's for new bits of story that I don't know specifically what's going to happen. So I just can't do that guesswork yet, because it's just almost too random, maybe. Or not random, I can guess, like, okay, the story starts here, these things happen, and then it ends here, this might be episode one and whatever, and I will do that in the spoiler preview, but that again will still be guesswork, because again, I didn't work on season two or season one or any of this. So I don't know how this all works, and I'm not a TV editor expert or a TV expert in the way that Neil Druckmann is, in the way that Craig Mazin is, who's been a showrunner, because I've never been a showrunner before. So, yeah, in terms of season one, still brilliant, still, again, emotional, good to go through, again, Sarah's death every single time, still hits like a ton of bricks. So very good stuff. See, I was envisioning this version, not that I'm disappointed or annoyed by this, because we're only at an hour and 45 minutes, but because we do the overthinking fan thing of, like, trying to break every single little bit down, I was like, okay, I'm going to make, like, pages and pages of notes. This podcast is going to be, like, 7.5 or 5.5 hours. But then once you actually get to the reality of what the podcast is going to be, you realise that it's not going to be something like that. Because the thing I was kind of going to do, but then realised was not what I wanted to do, and would have taken far, far, far longer, is, and this sounds a bit like overdrive, but like, when I have a new thought, not a recurring thought of like, oh yeah, this scene's good, talk about it again. When I have a new thought that pops up, is like, pause the episode or pause the game and write every single one of them down. But that would have been a little bit too much, I think. And that isn't also what I'm trying to do here. So, yeah. Plus, if I was going to do that for, like, okay, every single new thought for the, how many things I got, for 5 different versions of the story, yeah, that would have been admittedly a bit too much, and again, passionate and all that kind of stuff, but borderline kind of unnecessary, I think, maybe. So, yeah, because, I mean, like, as I was going through this whole process, I was like, okay, I know a bunch of things I'm going to say, pick a starting point and then go from there, which, obviously, we're past that now, but then kind of, yeah, just sort of go from there. So, and don't try to, again, it's fun to overthink and overanalyze, because again, that's what we do as fans. And there are people out there on YouTube with 3-4 hour essays. And hey, if you stitch a bunch of these podcasts that I've done together, you'll come up with pretty much the same thing as what those people have done. So yeah, but all we have to talk about now is, some spoiler thoughts and things for part 2, which we'll get to in a minute. Again, we'll go to the actual ad break bit for that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else, because what I'm probably going to do is post this today, think about it more tomorrow, and then there'll probably be at least one or two things, because it happens every single time, and you go, oh, I didn't talk about this thing or that thing. But that's just the way it is. So, all right, before we get into this spoiler section, thank you all very much for listening if you stayed this long, because I do appreciate your time. Yeah, if you've got any thoughts, feelings, questions, comments, again, you don't have to do the same process that I've done, but any new thoughts that have occurred to you while I've been talking about some of this new stuff? Have you played the PS3 version of Last of Us 1? Which versions of which games have you played? Have you seen Season 1? Have you rewatched it? Have you just been through, like, the story the season and the game once each, and then you kind of just called it a day there, you had enough, which I'd understand, because it is, it's emotionally draining, it is. So, anyway, any thoughts, feelings, questions, comments that you've got, whether it's new stuff I've talked about here that's maybe flicked a switch in your mind, and maybe made you come up with a new thought or a new opinion, or any opinions, thoughts, feelings, questions, comments that you've got, matthew@entertainmenttalk.org. Twitter, social media, eTalkUK, and there's information in your show notes. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we're doing on entertainmenttalk.org. We won't be doing gaming talk this week, by the way, and that is my fault. I thought we were doing it tomorrow, which would be Tuesday. Robert messaged me. We usually start recording at 8:30 my time. Robert messaged me at 7. I didn't see it until 9:30 because I was doing other stuff and I didn't check my phone. And he said, oh, are we ready to record? I didn't see the message until way later. And I had the plans also to do this anyway today, because I thought we were doing gaming talk tomorrow. So we won't be doing it this week. We'll be coming back next week with it. Obviously, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about on there. But yeah, just to let you know, we won't be doing a gaming talk this week. And it's purely my fault. Robert was ready. He thought it was Monday. Or he knew it was Monday. I thought it was Tuesday. It's my mistake. So we'll be back with that next week. Film reviews. I didn't manage to do any over the weekend. We do have a United cast episode for the... Who did we play? I can't even remember. What was the game again? Oh yeah, FA Cup against... Who the hell did we play? Why can't I remember? Do you know what? Because we've been so bad lately, I've kind of tried to tune each game out after we finish the after I do the podcast, because I don't really want to think about Man United right now, because we're just not very good to watch and very nice. Anyway, newest podcast for that game. We don't play until next Sunday, or this Sunday against Tottenham. If you missed it, I did do a big future kind of talk thing about Man United and current talk about just everything that's going on. There's a lot of stuff going on at Man United, so I talked all about that. And there are a bunch of podcasts I do want to do. They are going to start coming out soon. I just needed to get this one done first. This big one. Because I have some other fun podcasts, other reviews. It's all gonna come out and all that kind of stuff just in due time. But now that I've sort of finished this one, I can put Last of Us back on the shelf for a little bit and focus on some other stuff and play some other games and do some other film reviews. So look out for all those at some point. So anyway, entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, entertainment talk, TV, games, films, Monday night podcast. If you want to support what we do, of course, word of mouth, social media. Someone mentioned something we podcast on, please tell them about the podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, every podcast review options. Look for that as well if you like to. TV and film news, Geek Town Radio did come back last week on Tuesday, so catch up with that one if you want to. You can go from here to there if you want to avoid The Last of Us 2 spoiler section, I'm going to do in a minute. But Geek Town Radio is back, that will be regular on Tuesdays until the summer. Should be a new episode technically today, so for the 11th of February. So look out for that. But also go to geektown.co.uk to get your latest TV and film news. We're also on Twitch as well, Geektalk UK, and we're on YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays. That's it for everything apart from Last of Us Part 2 spoiler section. So if you haven't played Part 2, you don't want to know, obviously big spoilers, all that sort of stuff, now would be the time to leave. Thank you for being here for this amount of time though, I appreciate your time. If you want to, you can go from here to last week's Geek Town and catch up with that before the new one comes out. Or listen to one of our podcasts, or you can do anything you want, really, can't you, I suppose. All right, thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you on the other side for the spoiler section. See you for that in a minute. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talk's podcast and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcast that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, it's time. If you've not, watched, I guess you could have watched the cutscenes. If you've not experienced Last of Us Part 2, either by playing, watching, or talking about it, or whatever, if you don't know what happens in Last of Us Part 2, now is going to be the time when you're going to want to leave, because I am going to get into spoilers. I've already warned you a bunch of times, so I'm going to get into it pretty much straight away. So the first kind of outline bit I've got here is an expansive build upon the lie, which is what I talked about a minute ago, exploring Joel and Ellie's now awkward relationship. There is a lot of bits, particularly in the first half of the game, and throughout the game as well, but there's obviously the first half of the game focuses much more on Ellie's story, and in the second half, obviously we split over to Abby, see her perspective, got all that kind of bit and piece, so that's all good with that. But you notice even in like the flashback stuff, not as much in the birthday bit, it doesn't happen as much there. There's a bit of a nicer spirit there and stuff, but again, going from the chain of Sarah dies, that breaks Joel, meets Ellie, checkpoint through the characters, build that relationship that, you know, gets better and better and better, becomes more father and daughter like, and then Joel makes a choice. I fundamentally think it was the correct choice. I know a lot, some people don't. I don't quite understand that perspective, but never mind. You do that. And then, because a lot of people talk about, like, when she says okay at the end of the first game. Okay, swear to me everything you said about Fireflies is true. It says I swear. And then she gives this just kind of understandably, not blank, but straight, flat kind of, I'm not sure what to think yet type of look. Says, okay, and that's the end of, again, both the season one and the first game. They both ended at the same point. And again, you're supposed to come away and think like, okay, what does her okay mean to you? And what do you think that means? I personally think it was just kind of, okay, I'll take what you say at face value for now, but that's definitely going to be something I think about. And it's interesting from like, I think it's called Gathering Strings, I think that's what the chapter's called, where obviously Tommy sets them up, where it's like, they're gonna go on patrol, give them an excuse to do that, because she needs, I think she needs it for her guitar, or he needs it for his, I can't quite remember. New strings. Hey, there's a shop down the road, let's go on it together. And they have just these awkward conversations between the two of them. And I say it's kind of sad. Obviously, a lot of these games is quite sad. But it's sad in this way of, like, the way Joel does small talk in the second game, of, like, oh, hey, those comics you were reading, I think it was the comics he was talking about. Started reading them, he starts talking about his character arc and all this kind of stuff, and he's really trying to pry conversation out of her, because there's just this lie that's sitting there. And even through little interactions, like opening a door for each other, and there's bits where, like, you go to climb over this thing, and he's like, oh, do you need a boost up? Obviously, she's a bit more grown up now. She's a bit taller. She can do that herself. She's more grown up. He isn't kind of, like, realised that in that situation. And it's like, she's not quite your baby girl anymore. The one that you needed to sort of give a boost to go up the ledge. She can climb more things now. She's grown up. She's kind of, yeah, pushing herself kind of forward. And that, along with this lie sitting there, there's just this, there's almost this, like, there's this two-part thing for Joel, where it's this sort of, she's growing up, and again, there's, like, Jesse getting involved, Dean is getting involved, he's worried about, like, hey, you're going to tell them about your condition, you shouldn't do that, all that sort of thing. So she's getting involved in new relationships as well, one where she's actually gained a girlfriend, and a very good friend in Jesse as well. That on top of this lie sitting there, it's almost like she's not moving on from him, but he's almost worried again in a different way that he's going to lose her. But not in a way of like, oh, she's going to die in my arms like Sarah did. Not the same fear. It's like she's going to drift away from me, but she's still going to be there, which is, it's almost worse in a different way. Because with Sarah, it's like, okay, you can't recover anything because she's physically gone, whereas with Ellie, it's like, she's still there, she's still living, in the same town as me. She's just drifting away from me, and that's almost more painful for him, but in like a different way. And he doesn't really know what to do about that. And then introduces the guitar, and then it's obviously, if I ever were to lose you, and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's I think that's actually the, while I have talked here about, like, okay, obviously the second game introduces a bunch of new characters, because it's got new characters from Jackson. You've got, obviously, the Seraphites and WLF. There's the two characters, there's a bunch of characters that come from there. There's obviously Isaac's group, all that sort of thing. There's all these new characters which bring about this, again, that's the second game's way of expanding this world and giving you something new to have there. But it's also kind of like, again, you carry the Joel and Ellie relationship through to the second game, but it's fundamentally changed, because again, first game was, you know, almost accidentally building this relationship with this girl that he doesn't like her, she doesn't like him at the start, just cargo, just business, you know, it's all that you are, to you're my baby girl, you're my second daughter kind of thing. And then because of the choice and in the lie, and she kind of knows it's a lie, but she's not sure what to do about it, and then there's just the drift there. It's kind of how that relationship carries through that second game. And again, it's masterfully done, it's just obviously a different thing to deal with. So yeah, it's again, it's really incredible. So, but it turns it into this awkward relationship. But then it's also worse because she's growing up more as well, and she's getting more mature. She's getting more understanding, and she's pushing forward in life. She's meeting new people, and it's not that those new people have caused her to drift away from him. It's like, again, she's building this new relationship with Dina, and she's building obviously a fundamentally different type of love there. And a physical relationship with her. But, because you see that kind of thing in, like, when Seth says, oh, it's a family event, don't do that, and Joel steps in. Again, it's him trying, and not prying in a way, but he's really, really trying. And I understand why Ellie does react the way that she does to a lot of the things that Joel does in the second game. I'm like, hey, you didn't need to step in. I'm older, I'm more grown up, I can kind of handle this stuff more. But Joel doesn't know what to really do with that. Yeah, it's brilliantly done. And that, again, that's not Joel intervening in her new relationships. It's just like, these new things are happening, and Joel just doesn't really know what to do with this kind of stuff, but he's trying something because he can't lose her. It would just be too painful for him. Oh, shoulder clicked. It would just be too painful for him. So, again, not going to do the guessing game thing with where I think the episodes are going to end, all that kind of stuff. I'll do that later. But yeah, man, I'm just, it still feels like, because we're in February now, so we're literally a couple of months away from the premiere. We don't know the exact date right now. It's going to be in April. It still feels like it's just so far away from me, and I've waited for this thing, this second season, for so long. Which made me glad that I did do this kind of refresher on the whole thing, because it just almost gave me something to hold over. Even though I've been through these games so many times, and this is my the half playthrough of the eighth playthrough. I don't know, it's just, I've just become completely infatuated with the series, and just, I don't know, even through the, because the trailers are the only example of what I mentioned earlier, which again is, okay, game one, season one, you see how that works, you see what they're trying to do, now try to imagine and predict the same thing with game two. You can't quite do that yet, because we haven't seen it yet. But then we see what certain things look like and how certain things might play out just through the trailers. It gives you a bit of an idea from that, but at the moment it's just, it's teasing. Because it's like, you enjoyed this first go so much. But for me it's not even just, oh cool, see this game that you like come to life. It's like, okay, you showed me how brilliantly you can do that with this first thing. And that first thing I do view as more simple, because the story and the structure and what you're doing is more simple than what you're trying to do in part two. So taking the more expansive parts and new characters. There's so many new bits and pieces. There's so many new versions of these characters to explore. But then also seeing, okay, what's it going to look like when Ellie does certain things in season two, and when Joel does certain things in season two, and all those kind of things. But then you have, like, what is Dina going to look like on screen? What are these new locations going to look like on screen? When you go through certain gameplay bits in part two, what's that going to look like on screen? And then even in part two, we are missing certain parts. So, like, obviously with the Scars, the Seraphites, you barely meet the leader of that group. You spend basically a couple of minutes with her with the Abby scene. Assuming they do an episode for that, like, what that is going to look like as well. And again, those are new bits that we haven't seen before. We don't know what she's going to be like, what she's going to say. We know roughly the idea of her and stuff, but it's almost like if you take the second game as an expanded part of the first, which that's what I think it is, but then you arguably, again, you're doing the curving, snipping thing, which I did the metaphor earlier. You do that, and you see how interestingly that played out in season one. What does that look like in season two, with so many new bits to play with, so many new parts and checkpoints and gameplay bits and twists, and it just, yeah, there's so much. I feel like you've just opened up this massive new opportunity with season two. And it will be a better experience for us who've played the game, because it will be like, okay, here's this alternate version of the same story that you enjoyed, where we're going to take away certain bits that you don't need and expand them with, like, let's say maybe spending an episode with Isaac, spending an episode with the Seraphites leader, spending an episode, I've seen little rumours or stuff maybe of giving, like, Eugene an episode, because he spent time with Dina, and what does that look like? Oh, man. Yeah. Good, try not to get too excited. Just 50 out of 10 so far, like I said in the previous podcast. So, anyway. I think that is... I have one more note here. My microphone was covering it. I couldn't see it. Interesting to try and work out where the show could deviate, where certain episodes could stop-start. Main focus will be the episodes for the Seattle days. Again, I'll touch upon this more in my spoiler preview, which I will have to wait for the trailer for. Just to go back to our podcast plans a little bit, I do know that there's a podcast for that I did separately. So this obviously is a podcast project that I've been talking about the whole time. Then I think, because I need, as much as I love this world and these games and all sort of stuff, I do now need to take a break and do something else, admittedly. Because I'm starting to, like, fall behind on TV shows, other games I want to play, so I need to just put Last of Us on a shelf. I love it very much, but I need to put it on a shelf and do some other things for now. So, wait for the trailer. You watch. The second trailer will be out in, like, 2 days or something now. And then I'll have to go back into all this mindset and stuff. Yeah, when the next trailer comes out. Again, I'm assuming there's going to be another one, but... And this was... Because I was kind of wondering, right, like, I know why they haven't put out a more expansive trailer for season two, because you have the early block point of Joel dies, and you can't show too much of what happens later, because people are gonna start noticing, like, hey, yeah, there's a lot of Dina and Ellie, but where's Joel got to, kind of thing. And they do have that blockage for the trailer. But, because I was going back and I was watching some trailers for part two. I think there's three of them. There's a story one. Obviously, there's bits of, like, hey, I'll show you the world and new gameplay and stuff like that. There's the story trailer, which has got plenty of dialogue in. Because the thing they've avoided so far is having a lot of dialogue. Because you had, is it Catherine Hahn? Her thing of, like, okay, what did you do, and all this kind of stuff, tell me what you did, and Joel is like, I saved her. And then with the teaser trailer thing that we have, it's, I don't know who does that voiceover, by the way, I know I didn't comment on that in my podcast for that. Some people said that was Mel. I'm honestly not really sure, but I didn't really take that in. It's about choices and morality and stuff. the story trailer for Last of Us 2 has got a lot more dialogue. And basically what that trailer does is like point out, okay, Ellie's going to go on this journey. They don't specifically show Joel with her, because obviously he doesn't go with her because he's dead at that point, and that's why she's going on this journey. And it shows a lot of Ellie on her own. But then there is use of the flashback scenes, like the hospital and things like that. Like where he finally tells her the truth. I wonder if you could put out a season 2 trailer that is almost the same as the story trailer, which has more dialogue in it. Maybe they'll do that for the next, because I'm thinking the next trailer might be like more of a full trailer, but like with more dialogue and lines, because you can show like conversations between Dina and Ellie, you can show certain early conversations between Joel and Ellie, you can show bits with Tommy, you can show other characters. Again, I know they have the problem of we can't show too much of just bits without Joel, because people might wonder where Joel is. I understand that. But there's still plenty. I mean, you're only talking 2.5 minutes. But there's still other new characters to show. And you can do that. So maybe they'll probably do that with the next trailer. But yeah, so next podcast will be the trailer for that. So I'm going to, again, take a little break. Well, not a little break. Depends on when that comes out. Hopefully that doesn't come out too close to April, because then I still want to do a spoiler preview. That will be a light sort of predictions of, like, there'll be sort of more spoiler predictions and stuff, and maybe a bit of a breakdown of, like, here's the chapters, here's where they could maybe fit in with the 7 episodes. At least for the first half of the game. And then we have our actual non-spoiler preview with David. That will just be, like, an ordinary Season 2 preview. And then the actual podcast for Season 2. Yeah, that's basically what's next. So, put the games on the shelf, put the series back on the shelf, play and watch some other stuff, wait for the next trailer to come out, obviously do a dive on that. Then it would make sense for me to do the spoiler preview after that trailer has come out, because then we would have a bit more footage and a bit more of an idea of what's maybe going on. Again, depends on what's in that trailer. Then do a spoiler preview, and then probably a week or two before the show, because we still have February and March to go through, and then whatever date it's going to be for April, probably a Sunday. And then go from there. Yeah, so 3 more podcasts between now and when the season starts, which is breakdown of the next trailer, spoiler preview, that would just be me, and then a normal preview for season 2 for the normal episodes for the show. So there we go. Alright, again, I thought this was going to be about 5.5 or 7.5 hours. Obviously, that's not going to be happening. Again, that was just the part of me that got carried away and thought that I was going to make a million notes and 10 pages of notes and, you know, be here for another year or so. But thank you if you've listened this far. Hopefully you've enjoyed what I've put together. Hopefully I didn't build up too much anticipation for this. Because when I say podcast project, it depends how big you think that project's going to be. But yeah, this was pretty much what I wanted to put out, pretty much. Again, could I have wrote down more stuff? Could I have got into the weeds of more things? Or have I already done those things before? Again, this wasn't supposed to be a kind of let's retread over old ground. This was sort of, okay, re-experience what you've already experienced. Talk about some of that stuff, but then, you know, watch the documentary that you haven't seen before, play the PS3 version, which you haven't done before, and compare some stuff, all that kind of thing. So, thank you all very much for listening. And yeah, I guess that's it. We're done. I'm going to play a different game tomorrow, which we'll find out next week what those games are going to be. Yeah, I can't believe that after all these weeks, I'm about to conclude this podcast. But thank you all very much for listening, and I will see you soon. Goodbye.